On today's episode of Locked On Nets, Josh and Marcus recap the Nets' victory over Detroit, Spencer Dinwiddie's terrific performance, why Rhodey Kurucs is not playing, and also discuss the aftermath of Kobe's death, what it meant to Kyrie Irving, some jersey changes around the league, and if there's any good that we can take from this coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me as always is my man, Marcus Barahal. We're going to discuss the Nets victory over the Pistons and then give you some additional thoughts on the Kobe Bryant passing now that there's been a couple days to reflect. We'll talk about the Dinwiddie jersey change, Kyrie's thoughts on the matter. I think this will be, it's good to have a bit more information on what happened after we did our pod on Sunday evening, which was obviously more so reactionary and really just kind of us spilling our guts about what Kobe meant to us and overall his death and what it meant to the basketball community. Right, Marcus?
Yeah, totally. I think I was definitely still in shock on Sunday. I mean, it's still even... what is it, 4 days later, it's still like hard to believe it actually happened. But that being said, there is a little bit more time. So we've had more reaction from other people that we can now react to. So still an evolving thing.
Yeah, for sure. So we can get into this Nets victory over the Pistons. I think it did start out with a really touching tribute for Kobe and Gianna Bryant, obviously all the other passengers in that helicopter. I think the Nets have kind of had a sentimental connection to Kobe, obviously, one given that him and Kyrie were so close and Dinwiddie idolized him, but also the fact that Kobe and Gianna were at the game, it was, what was it, a month ago or so?
About
then, and obviously sitting courtside, they had the seats empty and had flowers on the seats that they were sitting in, had a really nice tribute at the start. I thought it was a nice way to kind of memorialize both of them and the other victims and kick off the game.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, there's like a connection all around the league, especially because LA is like kind of like a hub in the off season for a lot of players. And there's also a lot of guys who are just from there. So like, it doesn't really matter what team you look at. There's always going to be guys who have ties to LA for sure, which obviously means that they have ties to Kobe.
For sure. But for better or worse, basketball has to go on. The Nets did have a nice performance last night. You know, the second quarter got out of whack a bit when there was just no defense on either side. 76 points scored in total. The Pistons built up kind of a 6 or 8 point lead by just making everything. Reggie Jackson was tormenting the Nets, which is something very rare to see. Markieff Morris was basically hitting every mid-range jumper. Christian Wood was doing damage. And the Nets really didn't have an answer for that. But they got going in the end of the second quarter, ended up taking the lead going into halftime. And then from there, you know, it was kind of the Nets had a 6 to 8 point advantage every step of the way. And then when you looked at the end of the game, the Nets had opened it up a bit more thanks to some key play by Spencer Dinwiddie, who was awesome. Torian Prince had a really nice game. And they didn't make a sweat at the end, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I was going to say, there wasn't like a ton of drama in this. It was kind of nice. Terrible defense kind of started midway through the first quarter when the Nets were leading early on by a dozen. They were up 16-4. And then despite only giving up 4 points in the first, I think it was like 5.5 minutes, they gave up 64 points in the next 18.5 minutes, which is
that bad?
Not good. Yeah, it's not good. So the defense obviously needs some improvement, but the offense was so good in this game that it didn't really matter. You mentioned that second quarter. It was really weird at the end of it where there was like the foul on the three-pointer and then Morris just kind of threw it the length of the court without it touching anything. I thought that was... I don't think I've like seen that in an NBA game in a long time where the inbound just flew...
I love that.
Like all the way over the court. So the Nets almost got another basket off that. And I loved Ian Eagle ranting about the my bad thing because he was like, who else's bad would it be? Like it was very clearly his fault. Enjoyed that. And then, yeah, the Nets kind of held even through most of the third quarter, pulled ahead by a little bit, and then at the start of the fourth quarter, Dinwiddie just got red hot. There was a few plays, like the threes especially, were what made me kind of like take notice. There was the one especially where it was like a tough catch on the pass that was like kind of behind him. He spun around, I think it was Rose, and then just kind of pulled up from three with like 11 or 12 seconds on the shot clock. He didn't need to like shoot that shot, but he did, and it went in. It was definitely his night in his first game with the New Jersey number. So who knows? You know, it was good to see him play well with Kyrie, who Kyrie didn't play poorly or anything, but he wasn't like excellent. He had 20 points. You know, it was fine.
Yeah, he didn't need to
shoot the ball great. He didn't shoot it poorly either. He was kind of just fine in this game. And then LeVert also had like a fine game. So it was good to see like none of those three guys have a terrible game, which I feel like does happen a lot of the time. And then that's what leads to the Nets scoring 125 points. So when those guys are clicking, like the offense is really, really good still.
Yeah, for sure. I think the thing I noticed about Dinwiddie, obviously he's hitting his pull-up three, which is going to be a huge part of him being more efficient. But his first step, which I think teams had started to figure out a little bit, it looked back and dynamic. I mean, getting to the line 11 times, and not to say that Detroit's any sort of great shakes defensively. They're certainly not. And overall, they're a team that's really kind of searching for an identity. But I thought his ability to put pressure on the paint early on and also kick out to shooters was a really big impact, even if he had only gone, let's say, 1 of 8 from three. But combine that with the great three-point shooting, and you make for a really dynamic and efficient offensive night, which is what he had. And again, Kyrie didn't have to do a ton. LeVert didn't have to do a ton. And I think if as long as one of those three is going crazy, and then there's another one of the remaining two that at least has like a solid 18 to 20 point game, that's really what the Nets are going to need to especially beat some of these lower level teams, which they really should handle.
Yeah, for sure. And if they could just play Detroit every time, you know, they'd have a much better record for sure, because this was like, I think, the only second game in their last eight that they've won, both against Detroit.
So, yep.
Yeah, if only the Pistons could make the playoffs and play the Nets, that would be nice.
The Nets should relocate to the Motor City. They could use a second team there.
Yeah, why not?
When you have that great of a market, why not? In terms of the defense, like, I think some of it, Detroit was making insane shots, but I think there generally was a kind of a lack of intensity. I saw especially Kyrie was like, he lost his man on a backdoor cut. He was like freelancing, trying to get steals, and it would result in like silly fouls out in front when they were already in the penalty or just guys getting wide open. Overall, I think, especially when you look at the Nets, this is a very, one thing about Detroit is that they have a very physical, starting lineup. So like Derrick Rose, physical. Bruce Brown, he's a beast. Tony Snell is more perimeter based, but he can get inside. Dumbuya is a rookie. And then Drummond, obviously, he's one of the most physical players in the NBA. And the Nets do not have that physicality at all. So it does make for a matchup where they can get inside, get some easy buckets, kind of bully the Nets a little bit on defense. And I think that was a lot of the problem in the first half.
Yeah, and then the tough shots thing, I think, especially applied to Morris, who was hitting just like impossible fallaways a lot of the time. And I thought that the Nets did a really nice job on Drummond, who did not have a good game. He was getting frustrated, got that technical late in the fourth quarter. Jared Allen did a really, really, really nice job defensively, just kind of going straight up. He had 4 blocks in the game. I think most, if not all of them, were on Drummond. So he did a really nice job. It was more so those guards. It was Rose. It was Jackson. And then also Christian Wood off the bench.
Christian Wood's good. DeAndre Christian Wood's really good.
Yeah, he was really good. I had like seen tweets about him all season, but I'm not like watching the Pistons at all. So this was my first time like really watching him. And yeah, he's very good.
Well, yeah, because he was a huge recruit when he went to UNLV. They just kept him, like, no one would sign him. They would just kept him in the G League forever, even when he was putting up numbers. And, you know, he got, like, a cup of coffee with New Orleans. Was it last year? Yeah, it might have been last year. But now he's really gotten to be entrenched as one of the backup big men for this Pistons team. And he's been awesome. Can hit the three a little bit, even though he didn't show it last night. Gets the free throw line, very active. Gets a nice play in transition last night. He's going to be a really good player, and only 24 for Detroit. So between him and Sekou Doumbouya, maybe you even say, listen, let's try to speed up those trade rumors that we've been talking about with Drummond and see what we can maybe get something for him, just because we know we're not going to sign him this offseason. And then we'll be at least not horribly positioned in the front court with Seawood and Sekou.
I like Seawood. Yeah.
Yeah. Wood.
It was it was good. Like, he was really good to watch, but it did kind of frustrate me because it made me, like, a lot of his game, he's very, like, long and was kind of gliding on the court. It was reminding me of Rhodey, who, like, didn't play again in this game. And it was just like, ugh, like, it just made me want him out there even more.
For sure. Let's get into that a bit. I mean, Kurucs has been playing so well in January. He was probably the only bright spot against the Knicks last time out. What do you make of Kenny basically going with more of a nine-man rotation, a little bit of TLC, but basically saying, hey, Rhodey, you're not going to get any of the backup forward minutes. It's all going to go to Cardio King.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, like, when you look at the box score, because, like, it's easy to say, like, give Kurucs minutes, give Claxton minutes, but then, like, you do have to take them away from someone. They don't just, like, appear. And Chandler only played 20 minutes, which is not a ton. He didn't shoot the ball well in this game, but he has played well, I would say, over this last stretch of games. So I don't, like, want to take minutes away from him. I think the guy who I would want to take minutes from is probably DeAndre Jordan. Besides him, like, demolishing Garrett Temple's face, I just feel like he can't really keep up on defense. And, like, there's games where he's fully engaged and where he's locked in, but I feel like a lot of the time he's just kind of drifting around. He gets caught behind stuff. He doesn't, like, chase guys around. He's more just kind of stationary, and he'll provide dunks. He'll provide, like, a lot of cheap rebounds, but I don't feel like he's bringing a ton. And I think that if you gave, like, some of those minutes to Claxton, either as the backup five, or if you just played smaller and played Rhodey and Chandler, like, together as, like, a 2 4.5s kind of, I think that would be more effective, and it might, like, mess up chemistry stuff with Kyrie and KD being, like, such good friends with DJ, but I feel like that would be better on the court, is to take away most, if not all, of his minutes.
Yeah, I don't think there's any harm with experimenting on that. I think,
yeah,
like, especially teams that don't have, like, a bruising backup center. I mean, Kurucs could have handled Christian Wood probably, and he's actually probably a better matchup for him than DeAndre, just because DeAndre is not mobile. He doesn't want to get out on the floor and contest those dribble drives whatsoever. And then I'm trying, like, so they play the Bulls next. I don't even know who their backup center looks like. It's Felicio. He played 30 minutes last night, and I guess with Markkanen out, so he's going to be their backup center. And then their starting big man duo is, like, Hornet and Thaddeus Young. But yeah, I think against teams where they have more of less of a bruising backup center, it does make sense to try Kurucs out there. But I do, like, I hate to see him not playing. I kind of get where Kenny's coming from, because Kurucs has been shooting the three very well this year. But in terms of a catch and shoot, Wilson Chandler's, his release is quicker, his mechanics are, I'd say, more sound. So even though his overall percentage is worse this year, in January he's still shooting the three at 39% and taking over three attempts per game. Which is a really good volume for his limited minutes. And Kurucs is still only taking about kind of a 1.5 attempts per game or so. And you'd have to think, if he ramps it up, his efficiency is going to decrease. I think if the Nets do need a spark in any of these games, he's someone that's perfect, because he makes things happen on both ends of the court. But I think maybe a combination of saying, hey, like, I don't know if Temple needs to be playing 25 minutes a night. Maybe he's more in that, like, 18 to 20 range. Reduce Prince's minutes slightly. Maybe you can take DeAndre out, and maybe instead of having either Allen or DeAndre in at all times, maybe there's 5 minutes allocated to, like, Kurucs and Chandler playing the big man role. So I think there's definitely ways to get him in the game. And given where the Nets are this year, they're not going to be going anywhere. This is not a good team right now, even though they got that win last night. So I think you have to do what you can to see if guys who actually have the room to become legitimate, impactful players in this league, and kind of allow them to showcase that opportunity and get mistakes out of the way.
Yeah, you mentioned Temple. I was surprised when he went out that neither of those guys saw the court, like, in that time. I thought that was, like, a perfect opportunity to kind of bring guys in, because the Nets do have, like, even though they're not playing well and they haven't, like, shown that they're a good team at all this season, they do have, like, a lot of guys who could or should be playing. Like, they have, what is it, like, 11, 12 guys who, like, could get minutes on this team. So that's definitely a tough spot for Kenny to be in. But yeah, it seems like he's going with the older guys who he trusts. Like, the four bench guys that played in this game were Chandler, DJ, Dinwiddie, and LeVert. Like, regardless of what you think of where those guys are in their career, specifically like Chandler and Jordan, they're all guys who've like been around and who I'm sure Kenny feels like he can trust over a guy like Rhodey, who was like back and forth between here in the G League and Claxton, who is a rookie and is still like kind of learning his way in the NBA. So like, I get why he's playing these guys, but like you said, also like there's no problem with experimentation, and it's a random game in late January. Like, this is the time to be messing around and to be tinkering and to kind of try to find, you know, what would work, even if not this year, then next year when hopefully everyone's back.
Yeah, and it's also surprising because, like, he's such a player. Like, I wouldn't expect him to be a guy who's relying on the old heads, would you?
No, yeah. It felt like last year and the year before, it was, like, a very, like, merit-based kind of minute system.
And even before, like, I mean, he was throwing out Pinson, like, I don't know. I feel like something's changed. I think all these losses are wearing on him.
That's, yeah, that's
because he's much different than he was even like in November.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. All the losses probably made him think, you know what, maybe let's try to tighten this thing up and hope that KD or Kyrie doesn't like demand to bring in one of their own guys as the coach.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. He's taking the defensive strategy. He's not trying to play the odds. But if you're trying to play the odds, how about MyBookie? The big game is coming up on Sunday. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could just choose any game, call it, and get it right? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. It sounds pretty good to me. We got Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. We have NBA in the thick of action. College basketball also. Conference play, which I love. It's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. Tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain? MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you're getting an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use our promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. To take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer, visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Okay, so obviously a nice win for the Nets, but I think everything in this basketball community is still being overshadowed by everyone being rocked still from the death of Kobe Bryant. I know I still am. It's still surreal to me. It still hasn't hit in, even though we're recording this, I guess, about 96 hours even after his death, or a little less of the reporting. Marcus, a lot of jersey changes from either 8 or 24. Of course, our man Spencer Dinwiddie changed his jersey from 8 to 26 to honor the birth dates of both him and his son being April 20th, and I think he is April 6th. A bunch of other guys changed as well. Terrence Ross, notably. Someone changed their jersey to 81 from 8, so to still honor Kobe, but not the jersey he wore. Alec Burks, Mason Plumlee, Jahlil Okafor, Mo Harkless, Markieff Morris, Quinn Cook. Those are all the guys that have currently changed it. I think it's a really nice tribute, but I guess what are your takeaways now that we're a few days removed from everything that happened?
Yeah, I think obviously it's like a nice gesture by those guys to do that. There's also guys like Zach LaVine and I think Kemba Walker too, who both wear number 8, who have said like they're going to keep wearing it to honor Kobe because like that's the reason they chose that number to begin with. I think that's
right.
That works also. Like, honestly, it's like kind of up to the individual. Like, whatever you think is the best way for you personally to like honor him is like there's no wrong answer, really. It's kind of similar to how I feel about, or how I felt about, guys playing like on that Sunday. Like, I don't think anyone in the world would like give Kyrie any shit for missing that game on Sunday. And I don't think anyone should give anyone anything for like either switching their number or staying with their number. I think it's kind of up to the person. I liked Dinwiddie had like a ton of reasons for the change to 26. Like, they were showing them all in that like pregame interview with Michael Grady. And it was like a ton of stuff. Like, there was the 20th and the 6th, like you mentioned, is the fact that the crash happened on the 26th. It was, Kobe's 24 plus Gianna's 2 is 26. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on. It was kind of tripping me out a little bit.
I think that was in. I think you'd expect Spencer to have endless amounts of reasons. So that's falling into line with me. I think as it relates to kind of guys either switching their number off 8 or 24 or keeping it to honor Kobe, I think there's no right or wrong answer. I think everything's kind of up to the individual in this circumstance. It's not an easy thing that everyone's dealing with. And it definitely makes a ton of sense to honor him in whichever way that you see fit. I think the NBA did something really special when they canceled the Tuesday game between the Lakers and Clippers, because it just wouldn't have felt right. I think no one was ready to have basketball in Los Angeles in that moment. So good to cancel it, give it a couple more days to breathe. It's going to be very easy to reschedule. And I think when that game does happen and reconvenes, it's going to be a really powerful moment for all involved.
Yeah, I mean, even the Lakers' first game is tomorrow on Friday against the Blazers. Like, that's going to be a crazy game also. But yeah, that, like, all LA game is going to be huge. And I do agree that it was, like, a pretty easy decision kind of to cancel it, just because it is so easy to reschedule with them playing in the same place, in the same city. Like, any time that they're both off, you can easily have that game. So that made a lot of sense. And I, like, with more distance, I think having those games Sunday, not like that there's, like, a right or wrong decision. I think it does kind of make sense, though. Like, I'm kind of fine with the way things turned out.
What'd you think of Kyrie's comments about Kobe? Obviously, he was very shaken up over it. They were extremely close, didn't play against the Knicks on Sunday. I think good to see him out there, but what'd you take from some of the stuff that he said to reporters post-game?
Yeah, I mean, he was clearly still, like, affected. He was, like, tearing up during the warm-ups and that kind of thing. And then even, like, going out onto the court at the very beginning, I saw, like, long hugs from teammates and also from, like, guys on the Pistons who were, like, taking extra time, like, when everyone, like, goes around and kind of daps each other up before the jump ball. Guys were taking, like, a longer time with him and just making sure he was okay. So it's obviously, like, incredibly tough for everyone, but especially for someone like Kyrie, who was closer to Kobe, and I'm honestly pretty impressed that he returned as quickly as he did. Like, I kind of expected him to miss more time, so just seeing him back out there was good, and hopefully, like, playing the game itself was able to, like, take his mind off things a little bit.
For sure, and I think, I mean, his comments, like, Kyrie is someone that is a bit of a mercurial guy. No, a lot of people struggle to get through to him or really understand where he's coming from. But I think his comments were really poignant in the sense, like, he, like, looked at Kobe like a deity. Like, he would do basically everything he said, really took that mentor-mentee relationship seriously. And I think for someone to, like, basically command Kyrie's respect like that, so much that he's, like, deferring to him and really trying to emulate him every step of the way, it just goes to show how special of a relationship they had, and also shows how impactful Kobe was on so many players in this league. I mean, not everyone's Kyrie Irving and a superstar in this league. Even, like, the guys who are 11th and 12th men, I'm sure Kobe had a profound impact on them as well, because he was the guy that we all watched as we were getting into basketball. You know, Marcus and I are both 24. We're in the same age bracket as a lot of guys in the NBA, and I'd say anyone who's kind of maybe like 20 to 26 or 27, like, Kobe was their idol.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we said it on Sunday, but, like, I had countless friends, like, even on the opposite side of the country who were just, like, diehard Laker fans because they were diehard Kobe fans. And so his impact was massive. You mentioned Kyrie speaking. We also had, like, KD talking, who hadn't spoken in a while publicly, I don't think. And it was, like, really nice to see him talk about Kobe and just, like, the legacy he had and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I would definitely recommend, like, watching that stuff if you haven't.
For sure. There's no easy way to continue grieving. I mean, this is a tough situation. It's going to be something that is, has shockwaves throughout the rest of the NBA season, the entire world, and also, basketball moving forward. There's kind of no way around that. I think we're all going to do our best to come together as a community, provide each other support, and hopefully there's some good that can be taken out of this, whether that's people realizing and appreciating how short life is and spending that time as much as they can with their loved ones. And I think one thing that we've been able to keenly observe from this is understand how great of a father Kobe was and how much time he maximized his time to spend even more time with his family post-retirement. And I think anything that folks can do to even cherish their loved ones a bit more will be a good thing in the long run. Obviously, you don't want it to come under these circumstances, but it's still just a tough situation for all involved.
Yeah, definitely. Well said. And I think that's what Kobe would want everyone to do, is to kind of keep that Mamba mentality in everyday life and just kind of cherish what you have.
For sure. It's going to sound hollow, but I do have to plug some things before we wrap up. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. I am at JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be there. Rate us, review us, and until next time, be well.
Bye.